For weeks now, protesters in Hong Kong have turned out to demonstrate against their own government and Chinese control over the city. This Monday marked 22 years since Hong Kong was transferred from British to Chinese rule. And to mark the anniversary, hundreds of thousands again took to the streets to peacefully protest. But amid those demonstrations, a group of protesters stormed their way into the city's Legislative Council building. They dismantled fences and they smashed in glass doors. Listen to this clip of the crowd celebrating when they finally broke into the building. Once inside, the protesters, wearing reflective vests, medical masks, and hard hats, occupied the legislative chamber for hours. Some spray-painted the movement's slogans on the walls. The occupiers eventually left voluntarily just before police launched an offensive to remove them. But this is the most significant display of social turmoil since Hong Kong returned to Chinese rule in 1997. The anger stems from a highly controversial extradition bill that opponents say would blur the line between Hong Kong's court system and mainland China's. Ben Bland is the director of the Southeast Asia Project with the Lowy Institute and the author of Generation HK, Seeking Identity in China's Shadow. Ben, thanks for being here.
It's great to be with you.
For the most part, the recent protests have been peaceful. So do we have a sense of why some demonstrators broke into the Legislative Council building on Monday?
There's been a growing sense of frustration over the extradition bill, but also over the pressures on Hong Kongers' freedoms and autonomy, which were guaranteed to them by the Chinese government for 50 years from the handover. And I think the sort of scenes we've seen represent this bursting out of the frustration and anger that people simply feel they aren't being heard by the government. And while clearly they broke the law, there was some vandalism. These were very symbolic acts. They defiled the Hong Kong flag. They tore up copies of the basic law, Hong Kong's mini constitution. But they also left money in the canteen where they took drinks from the fridge. And they specifically advised other protesters not to damage the library in the legislative chamber. So I think this was very symbolic. It's not simply an act of violence for its own sake, as the Chinese and Hong Kong governments are trying to present it.
Remind us what it is about this extradition bill that makes these protesters and hundreds of thousands of Hong Kongers so upset.
Well, Hong Kong is ruled under this unique one country, two systems arrangement, and that effectively guarantees that Hong Kongers will have a high degree of autonomy, certain democratic freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom to protest, and also importantly, a separate legal system. And this extradition bill would have, for the first time, allowed Hong Kongers and Americans, Australians, anyone else in Hong Kong to be extradited to the mainland, thereby removing this key legal firewall that kind of underpins Hong Kong's economic success, but also the sense of separate identity in Hong Kong, which is quite closely tied to a feeling that Hong Kong has the rule of law. It has these democratic freedoms, which would ultimately be threatened by this extradition bill.
The protests don't have a single leader or even a group of leaders. Are we seeing them splinter as the demonstrations continue and some of them take on more aggressive or even violent sort of methods?
It's easy to cheer the protesters when they do something good and think this is great, they're peaceful, they're leaderless, but moving together as one big mass flowing like water, and then to turn against them when people think they go too far. But in truth, this has always been a fluid movement over the last 5 or 10 years, with different coalitions of pro-democracy activists coming together. So I think there have always been different views and some movements that people come together, and then inevitably they disagree over how far to push things. And one of the issues when you don't have obvious leaders is there is no one to set the tone. There's no one for the government to negotiate with. But I'm not sure that those things would be happening anyway because of the political environment, the simple difficulty of having a relatively free city that's part of the world's biggest authoritarian system. I think that political problem hangs over everything, and that makes it really hard for people to push for democracy, which is why they keep trying different avenues as the Communist Party and the Hong Kong government chase them down in a game of whack-a-mole, if you like.
So how are the protesters organizing themselves, and particularly how are they doing so in a way that avoids detection or surveillance by the Chinese state?
Well, it's obviously extremely difficult in the modern world to avoid detection by any state, anywhere. Luckily, in Hong Kong, it doesn't yet have the sort of internet controls and surveillance that we see in mainland China. So I think that helps. But people have been using a variety of methods online. They're using various Reddit-like forums, which are quite popular in Hong Kong. Telegram is another way where people are communicating messages, information, AirDrop as well on Apple iPhones, which I think is quite a useful way to avoid some level of detection. And interestingly, in the big protests, when there's so many people out on the streets, they've developed a kind of hand signal system to call for more water, call for first aid to help people who've been tear gassed. So there is certainly a spirit here that's developed over the years through many protest movements in Hong Kong. And I think it's rather like what we saw in France after the French Revolution, where there's this culture of defiance and protest, and people learn the rituals of what to do, how to build the barricades, but also how to help each other out.
Does this latest turn of events, do you think, give hardline members of the Chinese political establishment the opening that they've perhaps needed or sought?
Some people certainly argue that there may have even have been a conspiracy theory where the police seem to fall back from the Legislative Council and allow the protesters in there as some sort of trap to besmirch their name by letting them go over the top and damaging the democracy movement. But I think that's a little far-fetched. And to be honest, the Communist Party in its current form, it's assertive, it's confident, it's growing in economic, military, diplomatic strength. It doesn't need an excuse to crack down on Hong Kong. They've been squeezing Hong Kongers' freedoms, autonomy, and squeezing their identity, most important of all, over the last few years. So I don't think they really need an opening. And in fact, my feeling would be they're likely to retreat tactically for a few months, let tempers calm down, and then basically increase the repression with more prosecutions, more ways to clamp down on free speech and opposition in Hong Kong, which is exactly what they did after the Umbrella Revolution, the Occupy movement in 2014. They stood back when the students then occupied the streets, and some years later they prosecuted them, they started clamping down harder on journalists, they expelled a foreign correspondent for the first time. So I expect we'll see a similar tactical retreat followed by a sort of surge ahead and a much tighter squeeze on Hong Kong in the years to come.
Ben Bland is the director of the Southeast Asia Project with the Lowy Institute and the author of Generation HK, Seeking Identity in China's Shadow. Ben, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Arun.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.